When did you start that?
So I used to get picked on at school from about 13 because I was actually very short. I'm 6'3" and I shot up from the age of 15.
Yep.
And Dad wanted to do something for my confidence, so he enrolled me into the karate lessons. And not that I ever used it, but it did give me confidence to, I guess, just stick up for myself, and but without having to use it. So that was nice. But I'm always proud of the fact, I always say I was the best street fighter in Toowoomba because I was a really good runner. And whenever there was a situation where a fight could possibly take place, I would run and no one could catch me. So therefore, I'm actually the most undefeated street fighter in Toowoomba because I was never involved in a fight because I couldn't catch.
My name is Jared Smith, aka the Attitude Coach, and this is our very first episode. We're kicking off for the Attitude Series podcast. I'm super excited about our first guest that we've got here today, and it's got a huge following, and I couldn't be more excited than to have this man here. And just to give you a little introduction into who we've got with us today, his name is Mark Sharkey Smoothie. He is the founder of Smile for Smitty, which has raised more than $10 million in cancer research. Now, Smoothie, I call him Smoothie. Some people call him Sharky. I'm sure that his mom probably called him Mark or somebody. But he's a qualified coach. He's a massage therapist. He is an accomplished, get this, he's an accomplished athlete, has completed over 50 Ironman distance triathlons. And he's competed more than once at Kona, I believe. So three times. And not only that, he's also a husband to Alyssa, and he's a super proud father to Estelle, and he's a mate to thousands of people around the world today. So welcome, Smoothie. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, mate. And I'm probably not the oldest father at 56 years of age, but it's getting up there. My daughter's only 2 years of age.
2 years of age. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah. And she's riding a bike now, I see.
Yeah. For her second birthday, we got her a balance bike. So the balance bikes don't have any pedals. So with that, they then progress to a bike without pedals, hopefully in a year's time.
Awesome. Awesome. I did see some of that footage. I saw her. I think she was actually passing you at one stage. She might have been drafting.
Yep. Yeah, I've taught her good Peloton skills already.
Good stuff. Well, let's kick into it because there's so much good information that I want to talk to Smoothie about today. And one of the first things I like to do is just dive back into Smoothie. Is it true? You're a Queenslander, right?
Yep, born and bred in Toowoomba. Yeah, proud Toowoomba boy. Haven't lived there for a long time, but grew up there up until I was 18 years of age. And I guess except for 5 years that we spent in Inverell in New South Wales, my childhood years, all meant some great Toowoomba times.
Now, when we say grew up until you were 18, Toowoomba, what was it like growing up in your household there in Toowoomba?
It was pretty crowded because we only had a two-bedroom house and one lounge room, and there were seven kids. So mum and dad turned the lounge room into a bedroom, which yep. four of the kids slept in, and the other three were in the other room. We didn't care. We didn't know any better. It was just, we were hardly inside at all, just to eat and to sleep.
Yep.
Back in that era, in the 60s and 70s, it was all about being outdoors. So my memories of Toowoomba, I guess, all the adventures that we had outside in the backyard, in the playgrounds back then, and on the many hikes that our father used to take us on, which taught me a great mental fortitude to never give in. my first hike with Dad. I was only 5 years old, and he took me out for an 11K hike. And I started complaining after 3 or 4K, and he would not pick me up, would not let me do anything but walk. So 11K later, I finished, and yeah, I think that's where I got my stubbornness from.
I believe it. I totally believe it. That's excellent. So seven kids, and where did you fit in amongst the seven?
Second youngest. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, I got a sister under me that's 4 years younger. So she just hit her 50.
Wow.
50th birthday. So yep, it's lovely.
And how? And do you get a chance to? Are any of them still out in Toowoomba?
Yeah, most of them are still there. My sister Kay and my brother Stephen, they moved out. And yeah, the rest are still there. Mum and Dad are still there, so quite often still go up there to family
awesome.
Birthdays and Christmases.
That's awesome. And see, myself being out in Toowoomba and those areas, I sit there and I think about little country towns, for especially for other people that might be seeing this that might be in America or somewhere else in the world. Toowoomba is a big country town, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. When I was going up there, there was 80,000 people. About 2 hours drive west from Brisbane.
Yeah.
And it's known as the Garden City because it's famous for the Carnival of Flowers every September. It's rich volcanic soil. It's actually, Toowoomba is actually situated on top of an old volcano, obviously extinct.
Yes.
And but the soil there is just amazing. This deep, deep, dark, rich red soil that as long as we get the rain, anything will grow in it and fast.
That's excellent.
Except for money.
Yeah. So when you were growing up out there, and this, we're talking like late 60s, early 70s, growing up out there. Who were some of the strong influences in your life?
For me, growing up, right up until I was 15, there was no real strong influences. I would have to say Mum and Dad, just because they're there all the time. Obviously, in your later teenage years, you're not getting along with Mum and Dad. You don't really appreciate them until, you know, after you get out of your teens. So I found that anyway. But it was from the time I hit high school, just the friends I made, and they were a big influence on me. Great friend of mine, Wes Thompson, we met in year nine. We're still friends to this day. And I'm 56 now, so I guess I looked up to Bruce Lee. Back then, Bruce Lee was the big movie hits for me. So I then got involved in karate because of Bruce Lee. I wanted to be like Bruce Lee. So
I didn't know that. I didn't know you were a karate. So what belt did you get to?
Yeah. I got to blue belt.
Yeah.
It was with a sporting club it was a kung fu karate called Shuan Ru. The instructor was taught in Japan. So I was with him for 4 years, and you had to earn your belts. He wouldn't put you up. But I loved his attitude. His attitude shaped my life, because he didn't teach kung fu or karate for you to go out and bash up people. He taught you as a discipline.
Yeah.
And really, that was a great time in my life, because I joined karate thinking I wanted to be like Bruce Lee, but then this instructor, Peter Williams, he gets inside your head and makes you a good person, a better person.
Yeah.
And on top of obviously what, you know, the upbringing you get from your parents.
That's right. And that's cool, because martial arts is, they always say when you got a kid that's, you know, a little bit loose out there and all that, martial arts is such a good thing to get them involved in, because it gives them discipline, teaches them a different skill, and also as an outlet as well. But yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah, so that was something that obviously
asked me to fight me.
Oh, man, that is classic. That's great stuff. That's great stuff. So when we talk about, and thank you for sharing that, man. I didn't know that either. I'll have to remember that because you know, in my opinion, you're this gentle giant. Every time I see you, I want to give you a hug, you know, not knowing that you're actually a lethal weapon inside. But one of the things I found interesting is that, like most young kids, when they first get a bicycle, they have a sense of freedom and they start to go out and they start to explore and do all that sort of thing. I read somewhere that you got a bike when you were 6. Is that right?
Yeah, around the same time, Dad started taking me for the hikes. He got me a bike, so somewhere between 5 and 6. And back then, they didn't do the trainer wheel like they do now.
Yeah.
And Dad just put me on a bike, and every time I fell off, no matter how much I cried, he just tell me to get back on. You're going to learn to ride that bike. There was no... Yeah, you didn't get a chance the next day or the day after. You had to pick it up that day.
Right, that's right.
Dad had 7 kids, so he had to do what he had to do with the time that he had. So I learnt to ride a bike without pedals in one afternoon, but I fell off many, many times, and there was lots of tears.
Wow. So you could say he was really a taskmaster.
Yes, yeah. Very much so, yeah.
And how was your mom coping with that, you falling over all the place?
Yeah, mom kind of just looked the other way, yeah. It wouldn't, yeah, you could go crying to mom about it, but, yeah, she'd always just, stick up for Dad.
So it was just you and your baby sister that didn't know how to ride a bike at that point? So yeah. The other 5 probably already got the bike riding skills down. And yeah, you were
absolutely. But I guess, yeah, bike riding wasn't a real passion for me back then, but I did enjoy it once it gave me freedom, you know. Like when I first learned, I was living in Inverell in New South Wales, a small country town, and it gave me the freedom. And back then, at 6 years of age, 7, you could go for rides by yourself. There was hardly any traffic. Mum and Dad didn't care as long as you were back by dinner time. And you told them where you were going. Mum, I'm going for a ride. Okay, make sure you're back before dinner. Yep.
I love it. I love it. That's great. So moving forward, as far as I know, well, Bruce Lee has since passed on. But one of the things I was going to ask you is some of these famous people, have you had a chance? I mean, is there anybody out there right now who's a real hero of yours that you've been inspired by even lately has been an influence on you?
Yeah, I guess it wasn't until much, much later in my life that people started to inspire me. And it was the inspiration that came after I lost a good friend, Adam Smitty. Because those people that inspired me then started to come into my life. So I've jumped forward a number of years here from my teens right up to I was 44 years of age.
Yeah.
And that was when my good friend Adam Smitty passed away from melanoma. Only then were people starting to come into my life that got caught up in the Smitty journey that... inspired me. We can talk about that.
By all means. I'm you know what, especially like and for those that don't know, Smoothie and I actually went to the movies last night, and one of the things that Smoothie said to me is like, all right, this would be great, well, you can hear it straight from the horse's mouth, and those were your words as we were walking out. So I am interested to hear the story. I've seen some of the video footage, I've seen some clips of you talking as well, but I'd love to hear, and so would everybody else, just for you to share how that story unfolded for you to become the founder of Smile for Smitty.
Yeah, sure. My background in sport is triathlon. I started triathlon when I was 21 years of age.
Yep.
And I was living in Perth, Western Australia. And I travelled all over the world to do events, not as a professional, but as a fairly high-level age group competitor.
Was it always long distance triathlon?
I didn't really start the long distance triathlon until 10 years into my journey with triathlons.
Yep.
I was more short course athlete. That's where I was very competitive. The long ones came in, 5 to 10 years into my journey, but they were more just I wanted to finish, and they were so hard, like iron distance triathlons.
Yeah.
But anyway, the triathlon scene led to me getting a coaching job at UQ Sport as the triathlon coach there. And through that job, I met a number of students. And one of those students was Adam Smitty. And he was a very talented triathlete that was coming up through the ranks. He actually was a bodybuilder prior to being a triathlete. And he lost so much weight so quickly that he had stretch marks.
Wow.
But anything Adam did, he did it 100%. If he was going to be a bodybuilder or lift weights, he was going to do it to the best of his ability. And so when he progressed from running events to triathlon, he just threw himself into it. And so I coached Adam for a couple of years along with everybody else at UQ. And it was 2 years into the journey that he was diagnosed with melanoma. And without going to all the nitty-gritty, that journey was only a very short 8-month journey from the time that he got the melanoma to the time that he passed away. And I was just devastated when he passed away.
Well, obviously you guys built a pretty strong relationship. You had a strong, for you to be angry about what had happened, or there must have been some stuff that, besides just being a coach, what was it that was special about Adam in particular that you took such a liking to him?
He's just one of those blokes to do anything for you. If you need a hand, he'd just be the first person there and not expect anything for it. Yeah. Just being a great mate. So I was coaching him as a student, but we became really good friends along the way. And he was physiotherapy student, and he graduated and was happily working, helping people with their injuries. And just sort of bloke that never had a bad word to say about anybody. Just a beautiful human being.
Right.
To the point that he was actually a good-looking bloke, to the point that he was so popular with the girls at UQ that he would never make any moves on any of the girls. And one day I said to him, "Adam, don't take this the wrong way, mate, but are you gay?" I said, "There's no problem with you are gay. Like, I've got plenty of gay friends. But all these girls, basically throwing themselves at you, and you just don't seem to be interested." And he said, "Smoothie, this is going to come across a bit old-fashioned, but I'm holding out for that girl that I want to spend the rest of my life with."
Wow.
And I just thought, well, that just threw me for six, because not many people have that outlook or fortitude to, to hang out, to, so.
Well, something's obviously rubbed off on you, because you you're a late bloomer yourself, aren't you?
Oh, very late. So my wife and I, we didn't meet till I was 50 and we had Estelle when I was 54. So never say never. But, and it was Adam's persistence with this idea that he had about riding to Townsville that never actually transpired, because Brisbane to Townsville is actually 1,600 kilometres. It's a bloody long way. And
for those listening, the 1,600 kilometre, how did that come about? This was actually called the credit card ride.
That's right. So basically Adam would he approached me a number of times when I was a coach there, and he said, would you consider riding to Townsville with me? And I'd always humour him and just say, look, I'm busy this week, but yeah, let's talk about it, yeah, in a couple of months' time. So he persisted, and eventually he got the cancer and he passed away. So we never got to realise his dream. So when Adam passed, I asked his parents after the funeral if I could have permission to ride to Townsville to honour their son's memory and also his desire to ride to Townsville, see his parents, and then just fly home from Townsville. And that's where the credit card ride came
right
from
on.
Because we were just going to do it with backpacks and a credit card.
It just sounds like an adventure. It sounds like an adventure.
Yeah, it was.
So from there, you end up doing that ride with two other mates not long after Adam's passing. And so you guys did the 1,600 kilometers. And then it springboards from there to the following year to having something like how many other athletes the second year they decide to do this?
Yeah, so that first year there's just the three of us. The following year it was only just meant to be a one-off. And then the following year, because that first year was so successful, we raised 24,000, which wasn't a huge amount, but for three blokes, we were pretty proud of that. And then we
Well done, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. And then we thought, well, let's give it another shot and just see what happens. So we run it around the same time of the year, second week in September. And, we had 22 people sign up for it, and we raised $190,000. And then second year led to third year where we attracted 50 people. And the interesting thing about this story is the first year, second year, third year were predominantly all people that somehow were connected with Adam or friends of a friend. And then that third year, we were 50 riders, we raised $440,000. And it was only then that we started going, wow, this is huge. We've got to keep running with this. We're raising some great money for research. And it was the fourth year that we had 60 riders on board where the dynamics started to change, where half of them were Adam's friends or people that knew Adam, friends of friends, and the other half were people that were starting to get caught up on the Smitty story. And wanted to do this amazing 8-day ride that involved 200 kilometer days in a row. And that fourth year we raised $630,000, and that was just unheard of back then for a charity ride to raise that sort of money with just 60 riders.
Smoothie, that is phenomenal. That's phenomenal. And to this date, which I might have said this earlier, but I think we said there's been over the last decade now over 66 events held. You've had over 2,100 athletes out there competing or out there actually riding cycling, and you've now raised over $10 million.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, looking back, 2006, three blokes, $24,000. You can't look 12 years into the future and go, this small event is eventually going to tick over the $10 million mark. So extremely proud of it. Extremely proud of the research that's come out of it and where that money's gone. I guess with those 66 events, it stemmed from those initial first few years. And we realized early on that a lot of people out there wanted to get involved in a Smitty event, but to ride 8 days up to Townsville was beyond some people, but they still wanted to do a Smitty event. So we started introducing smaller rides, so 3-day rides, 4-day rides, 5-day rides. We started doing events overseas. We put on events in the French Pyrenees, the French Alps, the Italian Dolomites, We've had events now in every state in Australia. It kick-started my own ride around Australia. I rode around Australia over a period of 7 years.
Wow.
2008, that kicked off. And each year I would do a 2,500 to 3,000 kilometre section of Australia. I couldn't afford the time or money off to do it all in one go like superhuman people do.
Right.
So I just did it over 7 years. But the great thing is, that was another thing that started from, there was just two riders in the first year, three the second year, and that just grew and grew and grew to the last 2 years when we rode Tasmania, Adelaide to Melbourne, Melbourne to Brisbane, where we were having 30 to 40 riders and raising $500,000.
That is phenomenal, Smoothie. That's phenomenal. One of the things you're talking about, because I can see already in the way you're talking about it, you're getting a little bit passionate about this. And obviously, it is a passionate topic. And how that passion is transferred from the Smitty organization into, it's really become its own community. And it's a huge tribe of people now that have found themselves in a place that they love participating and being part of. Would that be a fair statement?
I think with any of these charity events that get started, it, or anything that you're passionate about, it relies on your passion to not only get it started, but to sustain the journey ahead. For me, that passion was so strong for the first 4 to 6 years. And then what happens is so many good people come on board the Smitty journey that passion gets transferred into them.
Yep.
And the brilliant thing about that is the person that started it can start to take a step back because those people help the whole organization grow through their passion. And their passion's just as strong as what mine is. It's just that it's fresh passion. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I get you. I totally get you. And in terms of, you know what, if Adam was here today, what do you think he'd be saying about this organization?
Adam was sort of bloke that never liked attention drawn to him. So he'd be really proud of the organization and the money we've raised and the lives that those funds are saving right now. But he'd also be a little bit embarrassed. And he would like to just sit in the background. Adam and I share that attribute. If I could, I would love to just sit in the background and watch it all unfold and not have to be in front of cameras or doing interviews and that, because that's the side of me. Because there's a shy side of me that just wants to hide. But that passion to raise funds and to... so other families don't have to go through the grief that Adam's parents went through, David and Maria Smitty.
Yep.
I overcome that fear of public speaking.
Well, I'm super happy to have you here today, especially to be here today and to talk about it. And I know that you're on camera and recording this as well. So it's excellent to hear it directly from yourself. One of the other topics that I know that you're passionate about besides the Smitty organization is when you talk about family, you talk about your beautiful wife and beautiful daughter, Estelle and Elisa. So,
just before we leave the Smitty is like a huge family now.
Yeah.
Once you do a Smitty event, you are then part of the Smitty family. And I'm really proud of that because I come from a family of seven kids, mum and dad. And the amazing thing about my parents and the family side of things is mum and dad create seven kids. Their seven kids create 14. Their 14 go on to create 20 great-grandchildren.
Wow.
Their last sibling sorry, their last son at 54 years of age adds to that pool with one more grandchild, then they couldn't have been happier. And to see the joy on their face when we announced that Alyssa was pregnant, it just meant the world to me. Because it meant the world to Mum and Dad, they always wanted to see me settle down, find a good lady, have a baby, and I think it's finally starting to happen.
That's awesome. And this actually happened in Challenge Wanaka in New Zealand.
Yeah,
right.
Because
I saw these pictures. You know, you're wearing a triathlon suit, but it's a triathlon suit with a tuxedo triathlon suit. And yeah. Alyssa was wearing, you know, once again, like you were all getting married at the event, right?
Right, correct. So the story there is Alyssa's a triathlete, and when I met her, she was also an Ironman triathlete. And a friend kind of planted the seed that I should propose to her during an Ironman, which I did at Ironman Melbourne. If you ever want to see that, it's actually on YouTube. It's very funny.
We'll have to put that one in the notes.
Yeah, very funny video of she knew nothing about it. I got all the family and friends down there. At the halfway point of the marathon, we came upon all this big group of people, and I got down, I did a poem for her and proposed to her in front of not only all her family and friends, but a huge live audience because they were televising it at the time during the Ironman.
Mate, for somebody who doesn't want to do public speaking or be in the limelight, you put yourself out there on that one.
Well, it was for a very special reason for, you know, to hopefully to snag the girl that I've been chasing. But anyway, that idea then led to why don't we get married during an iron distance event? And that's what we did. So in front of 85 people, we all went over to New Zealand and did a 3.8K swim together. We cycled 180K. We ran 21K, stopped, got married in front of 85 guests, a ceremony that took 40 minutes, and then we left and finished the last 21K of the event. So did I find the perfect lady in my life?
Yeah.
Yes,
I did. That is phenomenal. That's a good transition. Is that transition number four? T1, T2, T3,
yeah, T4. Yeah, T4, yeah. And then the great thing to come from that was... So we got married in Wanaka, and I'm not sure you can say this on podcast, but...
You can say whatever you want to say, okay, man.
But we actually conceived Estelle 2 years later back in Wanaka.
Well
so
done.
Wanaka is a very special place for us.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, I think I even saw somewhere in there you were calling Estelle Kiwi. Is that right? You were calling her calling her Kiwi.
Well,
right?
While she was still in the womb.
Gotcha.
That was her womb nickname was Kiwi.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you go into her room now, you see lots of little Kiwis, and obviously she has no idea what it means, but once she's old enough, I'll explain it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. One of the other passions I think you've got too, like, and this was a while back. I had a chance, I came over to your place and I was asking you, you know, what else that you're into. And you're like, Jared, check this out. I remember you took me into the garage.
Yeah.
And there was an old car in there, and you got something going with the EH.
Yeah.
You know, can you share more about that?
My first car when I was 17 years old was an EH sedan, which is a 1964 car, which is one of Australia's most popular cars back then. Of course, I didn't realise that at the time. I was just happy to have my first car, and that was sold when I was 21. Yeah, and I just decided that I wanted an old car to restore about 10 years ago, and I thought, well, EHs are now become collector's item because they're over 50 years of age. There's still a few of them out there, but the good ones are hard to find. So, yeah, I was lucky enough, a friend of mine found one in Mackay for me and came into my life 2 years ago, around the same time that Estelle came into my life. So we get regular photos. It's going to be a five-year project to do it up because old cars cost money.
Absolutely.
But, it's just nice to as I start taking a back step from all my work at Smiling for Smitty to have other interests, and that interest now going towards my family, and also something that's totally different to triathlon and to Smiling for Smitty. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome, Smoothie. One other thing, I didn't even ask you this. How did the name Sharky, how did that nickname Sharky come about?
Can I just say, just in case anyone's listening out there about the EH, I'm always chasing parts. Since they're hard to get. So if there's anyone out there that's passionate about EH Holdens and you can help me out, I still need some bits and pieces, but... okay,
and by the way, we're going to go ahead and make sure that we also give you Smoothie's email address or contact details to be able to get onto him in case you have those EH parts out there somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, so to get to the question of the name Sharky, it's actually a really disappointing story in the sense that I wish it meant that, you know, like I wrestled a shark or I yep. got, I was involved in a shark attack and I fought it off or I swam like a shark, but it's actually got nothing to do with that. So in my early years as a triathlete, I started writing articles for a triathlon publication and I got the back page, which we called Sharky's Corner. Now, Sharky's Corner came about because my nephew, Craig, who I used to babysit, when he was very, very young, he started calling me Marky Sharky.
Marky Sharky.
So at some stage, Marky got dropped and Sharky, it's one of those weird Aussie nickname things. It's a name that shouldn't have stuck, but it has. So the only people that call me by my real name are Mum and Dad.
Mum and Dad. Yeah. There you go. Great stuff. Great stuff. Well, what we're going to probably do from this point, I love it. I love it. And I know there's a lot of information I still want to cover with you, probably down the track in another later episode and be able to get you back on here. One of the things I laughed about was, we look like we should be doing a podcast together anyways because we have matching shirts. Smitty said something about this earlier. He's like, I should have wore a Smile for Smitty, but I wore my Attitude Coach shirt. There's only one person in this entire world that has an Attitude Coach shirt besides myself, and that is Mark. And he got that on his birthday, and it's pretty funny when I saw that the other week. We were at the movie theater, and you showed up with that shirt. I couldn't have been happier. I totally almost forgot it. I was like, "Where'd you get that? Are they on sale now? Are they selling out in stores?" So
at a charity shop.
Yeah.
Someone you go to, put it in the charity bin.
Oh man!
But you know what? Like, I came here for this podcast. And I'm thinking, well, they won't be filming, so it won't matter what shirt I wear.
Right.
Because I wear Smitty shirts everywhere, absolutely everywhere. So I thought I'll impress Jared and wear the Attitude Coach shirt,
man. I love
and
it.
Now here I am doing my first podcast talking about Smitty, and I don't even have a Smitty shirt on. So I'm very embarrassed.
It's all good. It's
but,
all
but
good.
I'm proud to wear it because you're such a good friend.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you very much. So in terms of people getting in contact with you, let's just say, you know, if anybody wants to reach out and get in contact with you, if they got those EH parts, or if they want to contact you in regards to Smitty donating, or if they want to contact you in terms of, you know, because you're also a massage therapist, you're a busy guy. You got a lot of stuff on your schedule. I know that. How can people either contact you or get in touch with you or through the organization? What's the best way for them to be able to do that?
Well, obviously the most important thing is not the EH part.
Right.
it's definitely, so the reason Smitty came about is because he passed away from melanoma. They knew so little about melanoma 12 years ago that leap forward 12 years, it is amazing what they are doing now. Back when Adam passed away, they had one drug for for melanoma patients that was on the PBS scheme, so they could access that for free. Because of research, they now have four. And the strain that Adam had could possibly have saved his life had that been on the market. But that's only happened because of research. Those other three drugs are saving people's lives and other families from having to go through the trauma of losing a loved one. So, yeah, if you want to help out, please just go to the Smitty website, and all the contact details are there. So it's just smitty.org.au. Yeah, and if you want to contact me personally, feel free to use my Big Pond address, Mark Sharkey Smoothie.
Mark Sharkey,
yeah. BigPond.com. And happy to answer any questions and future chat down the track. We can I can give you some tangible information or results if you want to know where that money's going to. All that money we raise goes to the MARTA Foundation. Yep. They then distribute it to MARTA Research for all the important projects that and research that's going on.
Fantastic. I gotta say, I am I'm really appreciative that you were coming on the show today, and this being your first podcast. I think everything that you've shared with us today has been brilliant, and I'm looking forward to future episodes, but also getting you back on here down the track as well. Yeah. So, Sharkey Smoothie, thank you so much for being on the show, and best of luck with everything else going on right now.
No worries.
Have a good holiday season coming up, brother.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right,
man. My pleasure.
Thank you.